Jeff.
And we're here to tell you about an amazing job opportunity.
If you want to make a difference and contribute positively to the world, this is it.
Public Outreach is a place where passionate, creative individuals come together to fundraise and gain support for the world's most influential charities.
Like climate change, human rights violations, natural disasters, and animal welfare.
For more information, visit publicoutreachcareers.com.
Apply today to start tomorrow.
That's publicoutreachcareers.com.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola. No marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no? Don't miss the Vancouver debut of one of Canada's best-kept musical secrets when Beatroot Magazine, Weird Canada, Lifetime Collective, and CITR 101.9 FM present Jennifer Castle, Thursday, September 29th at the Electric Owl Social Club. Advance tickets are available at Zulu, Beat Street, Neptune, Red Cat, and online at electricowl.ca. That's Jennifer Castle with the Ruffled Feathers and David Vertesi, Thursday, September 29th at the Electric Owl Social Club, 928 Main Street.
That's a horrible buzz. It must stop forthwith. Wow. Really nasty. Morning. Our doors are locked and boards are buzzing. What I've played this morning on the End of the World News, moments from a mixtape from Jamie XX. I've been exploring the world of free mixtapes downloads on the interwebby. And also playing a lot from Konono Number 1. Assume Crash Position and some re-rubs of that, Traddy Mods versus Rockers, Congotronics, essentially, a series called Congotronics that's come out on Cram Discs, and I implore you to check it out. This is what's coming out of the Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, with all kinds of homemade instruments and modern technology. In about 20 minutes, Graham will be in and will be caffeinated and talking trash about international events and the latest crumbling of Babylon. But in the meantime, I'm going to play some more Congotronics and a little mixtape from... little mixtape from Peaking Lights. But before that, here are some things down off the SoundCloud, some remixes and mess-ups from Tina Grace and Nitin Sawhney, who I admire. We'll also play some moments from a new disc by Tim Gerwing, or Tim Gerwink, who is one of Vancouver's own electronic artists, and a man with a sense of humor about German accents. But first, here's a little moment from a mixtape from the Peaking Lights. Give us a call on 822-2487, and let's see if we can survive the buzz.
What's the buzz, baby?
See what this does. It's a bad buzz. I'll have to do something about that.
To the world. cry and hearts I leave behind for the love I'll never find. Forgive my lack of shame for the murders in my name and for following blind over stillborn hearts and minds. Excuse me all my crimes, discounting all the signs, ignoring all the words written on the walls of time. Forgive me for this. Hear my confession
Get ready, Steve.
$1 coke.
Hello, hello,
hello.
$2
coke.
Hello,
hello,
hello.
$10
coke. Hello,
hello,
hello.
$50 coke.
Heavy voodoo. Heavy voodoo. Heavy voodoo. International voodoo. Heavy voodoo. Heavy voodoo. Heavy voodoo a come. Heavy voodoo. Heavy voodoo. Heavy voodoo a come. I overdo the USA economic. I overdo Europe economic. I overdo the euro, overdo the pound, overdo the sterling, overdo the crown. I overdo the dollars, overdo the cents, overdo the munch, overdo the dime. $1 come. $2 come, $5 come, $10 come. Every voodoo will come, every voodoo will come. Every voodoo will come. $1,000 million come, $1,000,000 million come. Billion, trillion dollar come. Billion dollar come. Zillion dollar come. Tillion, centillion dollar come. Billion pounds come. Trillion pounds come. Zillion pounds and billion pounds come. I take the dollar. I take the munch. I take the dimes. I take the time.
Every voodoo will come. Every voodoo will come. Every voodoo will come. Every voodoo will come.
Hello,
hello,
hello. Hello,
hello,
hello.
$1 come. $2 come. $10 come. $20 come. $50 come.
$1 a come. $1 come. £2 come, £5 come. Heavy voodoo, heavy voodoo, heavy voodoo. International voodoo.
$100 come. $500 come. $1,000 billion come. Where are you going to hide?
To hide, nowhere to hide.
Every voodoo,
every doom,
every voodoo.
Spiritual voodoo, miraculous voodoo, magical voodoo. I do
every voodoo.
This is the wonderful Oneida, all crunched up. A little more Congotronics.
And then, you know, sometimes you can remember that music after you wake up. And so there's that, well, so he, Townes Van Zandt claims that, you know, he remembered it long enough to write it down.
Write it down.
And, you know, note perfect. And another one was Yesterday, the Beatles song, apparently, Paul McCartney heard it in a dream. And so he figured, apparently he figured for ages that he'd heard it somewhere else. And, you know, he hadn't made it up that he actually... But and there's a good example which I lent the book to somebody else, so I couldn't think. But there's a, it's kind of a sad example. I I think it was Debussy, the composer. But anyway, a composer heard this beautiful sort of symphony in his head, in his dream,
right.
And he woke up and sort of wrote it down, or wanted to write it down, but he knew that he wouldn't be able to afford to publish it himself.
Right.
And so he didn't want to, you know, start work on it and write it down, because, you know, he knew if he started he would have to go through it and he would lose all this money, and I think his wife was ill or something, so he couldn't afford to do that.
Right.
And he had this dream like three nights in a row,
right,
and didn't do it, and then, you know, was lost.
Okay.
So it's a sort of, yeah, it's a sort of, it was from the book Music Ophelia. So.
Oh yeah.
But the point that, but yeah, dreams, music is one of the, is weirdly intact. Yeah.
Right, there's also, that is it Cooper Cartin, that poem? The guy,
oh, but that...
I heard it in a dream. What was that like?
That was an opium thing.
Well, this is the end of the world. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM with Congotronics bashing away in the background, and it's just past 9 o'clock. What you just listened to was a moment from the Living Room Broadcasting Corporation. For you eclectic music fans out there, go onto the interwebby and check out the Living Room Broadcasting Corporation, coming from our friends in Edinburgh. They were chatting about the relationship between music and dreams and what music sounds like in your dreams. And if you real messed up, music sounds kind of like this in your dreams. The great Graham is in the house this morning, and we're just going to flip over for un momentito to the great BBC Broadcasting Corporation, from the Living Room Broadcasting Corporation, and find out what's happening as Babylon tumbles around our ears. What do you think, Graham? Exciting morning.
Well, compared to the BBC, I don't think the Living Room Broadcasting Corporation gets a lot of subsidies. not to say it's not quality radio. I'm just saying that they do it. They do it because they can.
Because they can. Here's the BBC, who are doing it because they're bloody paid.
Pakistani interior minister. Similar allegations.
Allegations.
Reports from Washington.
From Washington.
Admiral Mullen is close to retirement.
Bloody
He's clearly
stupid.
Chosen to speak very frankly.
Very frankly.
He told Congress that Pakistani intelligence supported militants of the Haqqani network in a serious truck bomb attack at an American base, as well as the attack on the U.S. Embassy compound in Kabul. Now, the accusation that the ISI actively supports militants in Afghanistan is not new, but rarely do we hear it expressed so bluntly and with such specific information attached to it. Admiral Mullen said that the Pakistanis, by choosing to export violence, had eroded their credibility, their own security, and their position in the region.
Stock markets around the world have fallen sharply after warnings about the economic outlook. Share prices in New York fell almost 3% on opening, following falls in Europe and Asia. Christine Lagarde, head of the International Monetary Fund, has called for more political leadership and urged emerging economies to do more to boost world growth. The World Bank president, Robert Zoellick, told a meeting of international financial officials that a recession in the world's major economies couldn't be ruled out.
The world is in a danger zone. In 2008, many people said they did not see the turbulence coming. Leaders have no such excuse now. And dangerous times will call for courageous people.
Public transport in Greece has ground to a halt, and dozens of flights have been delayed or cancelled as unions hold a snap strike against the latest government austerity package. Tens of thousands of people are expected to march to the Greek parliament later. Mark Lowen reports from Athens.
More austerity and more protests have hit this embattled country as it strives to meet the terms of its international bailout. Further public sector cuts and tax rises announced on Wednesday have fanned the social unrest here, with demonstrations by teachers and students and a strike by public transport workers and taxi drivers, which has brought Athens to a standstill. The finance minister says Greece is paying the price for the eurozone problems, but remains defiant that the government will stick to its austerity drive to qualify for further bailout money, without which Greece could declare bankruptcy as early as next month.
At the start of his first official trip to Germany, Pope Benedict is addressing the German parliament, the first head of the Roman Catholic Church to do so. About 100 MPs had said they'd boycott his speech in protest against the church's policies on homosexuality and contraception. Earlier, the Pope said he could understand why recent sex abuse scandals had led people to abandon the Roman Catholic Church. You're listening to World News from the BBC. Two French Muslim women have become the first to be convicted of covering their faces with veils in public in defiance of a new law. Hind Ahmas and Najat Nate Ali were each ordered to pay a fine. Both say they'll appeal as far as the European Court of Human Rights if necessary. Some Muslim groups say veiled women have been abused and assaulted since France introduced the ban in April. The European Union has criticised the way elections have been held in Zambia. The EU's chief observer said the governing movement for multi-party democracy used state resources for its presidential and parliamentary campaigns, including handing out maize at political rallies. An influential think tank has urged Western nations to support what it says are major reforms taking place in Burma. The International Crisis Group says there's now a unique opportunity to engage with the relatively new civilian-led government. Here's our Southeast Asia correspondent, Rachel Harvey.
The International Crisis Group says there's growing evidence that the new administration in Burma is serious about reform, and Western powers should adapt their policies to reflect the new reality. The Burmese government has made a number of conciliatory gestures in recent weeks, easing restrictions on the media, allowing a visit by the United Nations Human Rights Envoy, and holding meetings with the pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi. But opinion is divided as to how the outside world should respond. Some pro-democracy campaigners are urging caution, saying the steps taken by the Burmese government thus far are merely superficial.
One of India's best-loved cricketers, Mansoor Ali Khan, the Nawab of Pottori, has died in Delhi at the age of 70. He had a lung infection. At the age of 21, he became the youngest ever person to captain the Indian national team in the early 1960s. Nicknamed Tiger, the Nawab of Pottori came from one of India's royal families. BBC News.
Bollocks, it is. This is CITR 101.9 FM. This is, in fact, the end of the world news. Graham, is it, in fact, the end of the world?
Well, by the end of the hour, we'll find out.
It's the end of REM, who are, in fact, the band who said it was the end of the world as we know it, but they felt fine, and they've packed it in.
Really?
After 30-odd years, REM has said, you know what, I'm going back to sleep. Enough of this rapid eye movement.
I gotta say, I kind of like their sound.
There you go. Well, which is more evidence that nothing lasts forever.
If you believe in the man in the moon.
Yeah, if you do. If you do.
Go back to sleep.
Go back to sleep, you're in Egypt. So, you know, things are a little rainy in the world, not just in Vancouver. Vancouver has returned to rain.
We were spoiled with all those days in a row of sunshine.
Days in a row of sunshine, yeah. I was actually reading from my favorite right-wing Christian.
You have a favorite Christian.
Yeah, a favorite right-wing Christian investor site. So I get this newsletter from the right-wing Christians who believe that God will shower his mercies only upon Americans and only upon investors, and that
really?
God's
that
grace
bald?
Comes
is
in
it
the...
That, is that sort of...
Pretty much, yeah. Steve Christ is the name of the guy who writes one of these blogs, and they really do believe that God believes purely in competitive capitalism and that government interference is next to deviliness. And they had this whole article on how the Canadian bubble, about a Canadian real estate bubble, and how Vancouver was wildly overpriced, and their whole thing was, yeah, it's really nice if you're here during August, but come October, it rains incessantly forever, and everybody's miserable, and life is hell. And they were just, it was all about how dare we have such high housing prices, and they were basically saying we have such high housing prices because in China, there are a lot of restrictions on what you can do with your money, how much money you can take out of the country and what you can do with it. And one of the only things a Chinese person who has excess wealth can do to get his money out of China is to buy real estate. And so their claim is that people will buy a $3 million home that's really only worth $1 million because, hey, you know, at least that's $1 million they managed to get out of China. And they say this is a bubble just waiting to burst. What do you think?
Here's the deal. To some extent, although the statistics prove that at the high end, yes, there is a skewing of house prices because there are these $3 and $5 million homes. But if you look at the math, once you get past that, really what amounts to quite a small percentage of, say, the greater Vancouver real estate market, it's not as anywhere near as big a bubble as some people say. And let's face it, the fact is that those same people from mainland China, they could put their money anywhere. If they want to go to Austin, Texas, or somewhere like that, they can. But guess what? They want to come to Vancouver because Vancouver's like, it's Pacific and it's an Asian kind of city now. And we kind of think it's kind of groovy.
And it's kind of stable. And you can.
And as you pointed out last week, a lot of good Chinese restaurants.
There's a lot of good Chinese restaurants. Good. Yeah. And
yeah, there's one walking distance from here. There's one walking distance from my house, like literally a block.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the streets are paved
with
bud.
Mr. Christ.
Oh no, there's a certain amount of like Schadenfreude in it. There's a certain amount of, my God, how come Canada's doing so well? It must be bad.
It's the opposite,
right?
Of Schadenfreude.
Yeah, the opposite of Schadenfreude. Yeah,
we are envy. The Schadenfreuders.
It's that sense of envy that, you know, how come socialist Kanakistan hasn't collapsed yet? There must be something going on. Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's painfully obvious that it's the great mutual weenie pull on Wall Street, and then the bankers got together, and despite the looming second part of the dip of the recession, the deregulating crowd says deregulate, we're fine, we're good. I mean, come on.
European banks have just laid off 40,000 people last month. 40,000 people coming out of the banking sector, you know, a lot of bowler hats being hung up to dry at the moment.
This has happened a couple of times.
And the stock market has just had a big plunge just yesterday. Yeah. Why? Because the government pumped a whole bunch more money into, you know, the Americans put another $400 billion in, the Europeans put a whole bunch of money in, and all the investors kind of went, I'm feeling a little nervous about this.
Within the first half hour, I listened to the news before 7 o'clock this morning, and both the Canadian TSX and the New York Stock Exchange over 300 point more down.
Sure. Babylon tumbling. Yeah, so what they're saying now is that the recovery is clearly over.
It's funny. There are some indicators that say that managers in the business world, both in Canada and the United States, are starting to invest in capital. And there's a funny disconnect between, there are companies that are doing awfully well. There's now at least a lot of stock prices have gone down, but the fact is that it can still be argued that there's a fair bit of healthy business going on out there. Mind you, the Canadian dollar gets hit awfully badly, because as soon as the world says, the economy's slowing down worldwide, that means Canada's exports of raw materials, oil and a myriad of minerals and natural gas and stuff. That means the demand will go down, therefore the price will go down. So right away, the Canadian dollar takes a hit. And surprisingly enough, despite the United States, I mean, we get so much news about how the United States is in such rough shape economically, the fact is that there is a flight to safety. This is what the economists call it, and the stock market analysts call it. They call it a flight to safety. And despite bashing away at the Americans, the fact is that the flight goes to the American dollar.
It still has. In fact, we're back at par again. For your Canadian dollar, you can actually buy a dollar and a 14th of a cent. $1 plus 1/14th of a cent. So the American dollar has actually risen above the Canadian dollar for the first time in a little while. Flight to safety!
Since January or so. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Speaking of flights to safety, you know, there is one industry that's doing remarkably well at the moment.
Well, my grandfather was a bankruptcy lawyer in the 30s. Was it as good as bankruptcy law?
Probably bankruptcy law is doing better. But it may be similar. It's the manufacture and development of drone technology is doing exceptionally well. And in fact, the Americans have just put a new network, of drone bases in East Africa, in order to carry out attacks on Al-Qaeda targets and for gathering intelligence. It's interesting that we send dumb robots to gather intelligence. So one base is being set up in Ethiopia. Another base is being set up in the Seychelles, which is a lovely place for drones and scuba diving. And they're hoping to patrol the seas around Somalia from there. By establishing several drone bases, the U.S. hopes to create a wide ring of surveillance to monitor potential targets. Of course, while Al-Qaeda operatives have used lawless Somalia as a hideout for more than 10 years, the current threat is coming from Islamist rebels who are taking the country over. So rather than drop boots on the ground, it's no more Black Hawk down. It's now just, you know, Blind Hawk up. And these drones, of course, can fire Hellfire missiles as well as guided bombs. They have a range of a little over 1,000 miles. And they've been experimenting with all kinds of new drone technology. And one of the things that's getting interesting now is the sky is the limit for print-your-own drones. We've gotten into the world of the print-your-own drone.
Well, what does that mean?
I know this is exciting for a cartoonist. Your little cartoon eyes up. I can drone technology cartoon strips. Well, in Southampton University in Britain, researchers have been creating their own unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs. They're using 3D printing technology, which creates solid objects out of cakes of powdered nylon. It sort of solidifies the designs by shooting laser beams at them according to a pre-programmed blueprint. It sounds like one of these Pixar animations, doesn't it?
It's computer-assisted design at its finest.
So you can order a Salsa drone from a contract printer for about £1,200?
Do you get?
What do you get? Well, you get this
curved texture. You get a cake of soap in the shape of a drone or what?
Kind of thing. A curved texture of the surface. It feels like artificial wood. Each layer is about 0.1 millimeter thick. It'll weigh about 3 kilograms. It'll have a top speed of about 90 miles an hour.
Oh, it actually is an operating...
Yaman! With elliptical wings based on the sort of Second World War Spitfire design. And this is going to be great, apparently, for filming wildfires, everybody's favorite summer activity.
And filming the creatures running away from the wildfires.
For covert observation, like sending it out after those teenage boys who were chasing around your teenage daughter. Of course, police agencies are very keen. Last year, they put out a tender, the British police agency put out a tender for airborne surveillance platforms. We've got drones patrolling the Canadian-U.S. border now. They've got drones patrolling the Mexican border now. There are persistent rumors that the air above the 2012 Olympics in London will be buzzing with camera-laden security and broadcasting drones. Broadcasting for the camera, yeah, so our television is going to be coming from drones.
So it's not the Goodyear blimp on Monday Night Football anymore. It's a little more...
It's a little covert. More sophisticated. And what's really interesting about this, comes in the wake that a plane, which was also based on the Spitfire design, went crashing down into the middle of a crowd at an air show the other day. So one of the things about these drones that they're working on in Southampton is the ability to sense and evade. In other words, to put the equivalent of a pilot in there so that if they see something coming, you know, a low tree, etc., and something's gone wrong, that there is some evasion technology so these things aren't just crashing all over the place.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, we should get them to avoid buildings.
That's the problem. The technology for that is still about 10 years away. You notice we've suddenly got these commercials for cars that can parallel park themselves.
Now, that would be automatic as opposed to the guy in Phoenix, Arizona, 10,000 miles away, avoiding the tree with a press of a button.
Kind of like your Roomba vacuum cleaner that has automatic sensors.
Roomba vacuum
so that
it doesn't bump into
your cat, you know. So that is the problem, is now to get these things, you know, a little bit foolproof. But we've entered the world of the fifth element, and we've entered the world of Minority Report and this idea of these little flying robot creatures that are going to be zipping around, keeping an eye on you, and you can't do anything about them because you can't reason with them because there's no person there, right?
You talk about two relatively modern stories, but I was just going to say George Orwell. I mean, this is just another eye for Big Brother, right? Or a 10,000 eyes.
The only thing we got wrong about the George Orwell story is that Big Brother isn't watching us. We're watching Big Brother. You know, I was doing some research into Greek tragedy the other day. I just did a couple of Google searches on a couple of Greek tragic terms. And all of a sudden, Amazon started emailing me ads to try to sell me the history of the war and the Peloponnese. And it's like Amazon watches my Google searches and then tries to sell me books.
I was
watching Big Brother. They weren't watching me. I mean, I am complicit in this interaction, right? I'm the one who's typing in the searches into the computer.
So you, metaphorically speaking, are small and impotent compared to...
Easy.
Metaphorically speaking, compared to the 10
I'm going to get myself a drone penis.
The 10 billion eyes of Big Brother, but that brings to, brings to mind, can't you just disable your cookies?
I could disable my cookies to some degree, yeah. And I can use private browsing. But yeah. Then, as soon as I turn on private browsing, the computer naturally assumes I'm viewing porn and starts sending me porn adverts.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
No, I made that bit up. Oh. But it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, and in the meantime, all these unmanned drones... These drones that are being produced by British firms, export controls, the Department of Business, Innovation and Skills records exports of these drones to 14 countries in the last year, including Bahrain, Iceland, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates have all bought drones from Britain.
Roughly half are a bit Democrat-ish, and the other half are a bunch of despots.
Yeah, there's some scary stuff. I mean, this is the thing. I've been reading a lot of articles recently that have basically been saying, you know, England has this heavy surveillance camera society, but look how useful it's been in catching all of these criminals who rioted in the streets, and look how many, you know, and it's all this kind of thing of, I can live with this new surveillance, because isn't it doing a jolly good job
of keeping
us protected?
There's the old... I don't have anything to hide, so what do I care?
And it assumes a benevolent government. Yeah. What it assumes is a benevolent government. But what people keep not recognizing is that if you allow these heavy surveillance societies in, all of a sudden the government is not answerable to the people. The people are answerable to the government. And we won't have benevolent governments anymore. It's this idea that, oh, the government's benevolent, so it doesn't matter. It's a little worrying. Mm-hmm. We forget about the checks and balances needed to keep the despots out of power. I'll tell you another use for these unmanned drones that we haven't thought of.
Drone creep.
This one is absolutely proven by another story here. There was a little interview with some of the people who sit inside the little rooms looking at all the surveillance cameras inside the Ring of Steel in London, inside the banking district in London. And they have to sit there all day and watch the cameras. And one of the things that was discovered as they sat there all day watching these cameras is they spend most of their time trying to catch people having drunken covert sex up alleyways. And they're always, you know, trying to find some lady walking by with wobbling breasts or something like that.
Well, that's a real good use of taxpayers' dollars.
This is human nature, you know. You give us the internet and computers, and we browse for porn. Sorry, this is what we do.
And this is what the guys who are actually controlling the buttons?
Yeah, this is what the... Yeah, well, they're watching
nature.
For porn. So this is good use for drones, and I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Footage from remote-controlled submersibles and underwater drones revealed that male deep-sea squid struggle to distinguish between potential mates... members of the same sex in dimly lit waters. So what we've discovered with our submersible drones is that giant deep sea squids are very sexually promiscuous and completely bisexual. Mm-hmm. The male squid has adopted a sexual strategy. It just mates
humping anything
with any deep sea squid it comes across because it's
enraptures.
Dark down there. Oh, sorry, honey. It was dark. I couldn't see. Researchers blame bad light and the rarity of encounters between squid. Unsuspecting males are found with spent sperm sacs spread all over their bodies, which is a dead giveaway. This is Hank Jan Hoving, a marine biologist in the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute in California, has been using his submersibles to watch squid porn, especially. And now he claims that wasting sperm was apparently less costly than honing their ability to spot females and tell them apart from males. These squids, he says, like to live fast and die young.
It's all the expenditure of energy and the cost-benefit ratio. And according to this one fellow, that's the squid's strategy for survival is
live fast, die young. Hump anything. When sex is so rapid, evolution favors multiple matings. And this may also explain our own behavior on lava life. But what I find most fascinating about this is we have these wonderful underwater submersibles, and we use them to gather underwater footage of squid in action.
Is that Moby Dick in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
So I know. I'm very interested in what we can do with our drone technology.
Who can we find doing it?
How can we elevate porn to a new low? So, there's that.
Ah, I notice you, you have something news? There on what's going on at the UN in New York right now.
Oh, the UN, Palestine. It's kind of fascinating because it's all posing and posturing, and you go, this is serious business.
It's a three-dimensional chess game.
It takes place in this posing and posturing. Well, Mahmoud Abbas is threatening to submit a request for recognition of the Palestinian state to the Security Council of the UN.
Well, he's gone ahead now. Even if that article is just one or two days, he's scheduled to meet, I think, later today.
Yeah, but he hasn't actually done it yet.
Yeah, well, and
it's still brinksmanship because he's threatening to, but they might not.
Behind the scenes, there are, according to any set of numbers, a lot of countries want to give full recognition. However, as we all know, everything has to go through the Security Council, where
America has
the United States has veto
has
power.
A veto. Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating is that America is almost unable to allow the Palestinians to go ahead with this, and it starts to reveal the relationship between Israel and America, that, you know, it appears that America is a very, very large and powerful country, and Israel needs it desperately in order to remain alive. But yep. When you watch these things going on, it looks actually like the reverse is true, because being seen to betray Israel would cost Obama so many votes that it would literally cost him the election. So Israel seems to be a very strong force in American politics, and has an allegiance and an alliance right now, very, very strongly with the Republicans. And it's kind of fascinating that a country the size of Israel can pull so much weight that America is terrified to allow another country to do something quite obvious without vetoing it.
Some raw numbers came out, and I can't tell you exactly where they came from, but the general consensus is that Obama got about 80% of the Jewish vote in the United States 2.5 years ago, and he's lost 20 points on that. And these are just polls, so he's from 80 to 60. And how that projects out in a place like New York State, I think, is critical to the Democratic wishes for.
And I wonder, when we talk about the Jewish vote, whether we're really talking about the Jewish vote or whether we're talking about the pro-Israeli lobby vote, because there's such a profound difference between that. And, you know, do you know what the religion is of somebody who votes? So where does this statistic come from?
Yeah, you're,
you know,
absolutely.
Are we talking about lobby groups or are we talking about voters? Yeah. And my suspicion is we're talking about lobby groups.
And they're very powerful lobby groups.
They seem to be very powerful, yeah. Well, Abbas has said that his principal goal is to break the deadlock that has seen absolutely no serious movement towards a Palestinian state in years. And so he's playing kind of the one card he has, which is saying to America, unless you force a shift, we will embarrass you. The Palestinian demand is that Israel should halt construction of Jewish settlements in the occupied territories. The Palestinians are trying to negotiate towards... the result they want is a Palestinian state based on the borders at the time of the 1967 war that led to the occupation of East Jerusalem, the West Bank, and Gaza.
And then with some possible negotiated trade-offs.
And then with the idea of two states, two countries next to each other, Israel being allowed to be a Jewish state. And this is constantly the cry from Israel, is that they want to drive us into the ocean, they want to drive us into the sea, but they are actually stating quite clearly as part of this that they're willing to live as a parallel state as opposed to we will drive you into the ocean. But it is this idea of they want to kill us that means that we can't possibly negotiate with them.
7 points, I think we quoted 7.7 million Israelis versus at least if you just look at the raw math and the most scared of the people in Israel and on behalf of Israel, versus God knows how many tens of millions of people who don't like them. That's the raw numbers. I mean, wouldn't just on a kind of human level, wouldn't you be scared shitless too? I mean, I'm not excusing anything. I'm just saying, my God, we're surrounded by people.
Oh, it's a situation, yeah. Hey, it's a
but
difficult
obviously
situation.
It's not
Israel's
that.
In a difficult it's, situation. It's, the Palestinians are in a difficult situation.
A whole
situation,
bunch of Palestinians
sure.
and a whole bunch of Arabs say, let them live.
So
let
then
them
the
do
question is,
do.
How do you go about correcting this situation? Yeah. But what is clear is that the Palestinians have no intention of abandoning their Security Council vote without something to show for it. And if the result is that there's a serious push to make peace talks work, that will be a win for the Palestinians, whether they put forward the... And there's no guarantee, by the way, that if they put forward the resolution that they should be recognized as a state by the UN Security Council, that they're going to get all the votes. There's absolutely no guarantee of that at all. But what is interesting is that it seems like a whole series of events are happening simultaneously. One is, as we reported last week, that there is a popular movement inside Israel for social change because the economy isn't doing so well. Housing is prohibitively expensive. So the government is already being pushed from within by Israel. Another major change, of course, is that Egypt has changed hands. And Mubarak, who was supporting Israel heavily and protecting it from the Arab Street, has gone. And in Egypt recently, there have been some very strong anti-Israeli protests. So that shifts things as well. There have been a lot of little shifts in the... And now, of course, the Palestinians putting pressure in the Security Council. So it's just possible that some movement may be made. In the meantime, that doesn't seem to be happening. And Netanyahu does seem to have the upper hand here. Yeah. Seems to be extraordinarily powerful for the leader of a small Mediterranean country.
There's some talk of some kind of enhanced status, which theoretically would be an interim status for Palestine, the Palestinian state, the Palestinian Authority, as they're called, which would give them limited powers at the UN, for example, to the international court system, et cetera, et cetera. So all these things are, the back rooms are filled with smoke and sweat. As they try to strong arm each other and put on a brave face and what goes on behind closed doors being a fly on the wall in some of these meetings would be fascinating
and probably very frustrating as well.
Yeah,
there's so many personal agendas being served by these things, and you kind of go, oh, the poor people really don't stand a chance. They're just stuck behind it. Mm. Mm. Well.
And there is a general consensus that the Palestinians are somewhat emboldened by the so-called Arab Spring. I mean, it's four countries.
And they have a strong argument to say to Europe, for instance, and the rest of the world, you're supporting the Libyans, you're supporting the Syrians, why are you not supporting the Palestinians?
And the Egyptians to some extent.
You know, you're supporting all of these popular uprisings, so why are we so different? And it's starting to become, at least on the face of it, a compelling argument.
Yeah. And you think of us in Syria, is it Assad? He's shooting his own people. He's got a very big army.
Yemen's
and
blowing up.
I was just going to say, Yemen, they don't have a lot of compunction about shooting a few... protesters now and then, so unfortunately, and the numbers. I'm saying this too flippantly. The numbers are staggering. Certainly in Syria, they've killed a whole lot of protesters. But if you were a despot who had the who basically had a giant money bag, and you lived in palaces, and you were one of the chosen wealthy. You'd fight too, right? I mean, they're trying to find Gaddafi, and there are a few, stray loyalists here and there. But man, if I'd been in power for 41 years and basically done what I wanted, I'd be fighting too.
Yeah, I'll never find Gaddafi. He's hiding in Burqa somewhere. Mm-hmm. He's hidden beneath a niqab somewhere in plain sight. But one thing came out of the Gaddafi duck exploits, which is that rebels who were ransacking Muammar al-Gaddafi's home in Tripoli found a photo album dedicated entirely to Condoleezza Rice. This whole photo album with nothing but pictures of Condoleezza Rice at personal. This is Gaddafi's personal porn. The colonel's devotion is not an entire surprise. In an interview with Al Jazeera in 2007, the Libyan leader referred to Condoleezza Rice as a darling black African woman. She said, Lisa, he says, I love her very much.
Oh, man. So. It's some combination of sexual fetish and the fact that she is African-American. And so it's sort of a somewhat of a legitimization of the
powerful
continent.
Powerful and hot.
She's generally considered, I think, as a pretty much a historical footnote. I think she was...
Condi Rice? A historical footnote in what way? Maybe she ain't done yet.
She just went, well, there is that too, that she was somewhat ineffectual. And that was my...
Well, it depends what effect you were trying to cause. I mean, if you were
trying...
If you were trying to create a couple of big wars in the middle of Euro-Asia, then she was wildly effective.
Okay.
It depends what they were trying to do.
It's all definitional. Yes.
But, you know, these things are all relative to our interests.
Oh, and by the way, they consider Harper and the Canadian Conservatives probably one of Israel's... staunchest allies, and
you say staunchest
over and over. But over and over, he has said that no, we don't want the Palestinian Authority to become a country anytime soon. All will be well if through negotiation, more negotiation, as if negotiation has
all
been
will
going
be
on
well
since
for whom
48. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
I mean, one does get the impression by not allowing a recognition of them that there really is no intention of an evenness of negotiation, that we really are trying to take full advantage of the weakness of the Palestinian situation. I mean, it doesn't bode well when we say, no, we won't recognize your right to speak. That's not a good way. I mean, if this was a marital arrangement, that would be no way to start negotiations.
Yeah, just to paint a little more of a picture, I mean, most, not all, but a great swaths of the Palestinian state are... or non-state are impoverished, totally impoverished, and not only that, but they have very few means to actually get out of poverty. They rely on aid from various tax donations from the state of Israel, plus the United States, plus any number of other Western countries, and they're in a small area, and the water is limited, ability to feed yourself, agriculture, set up a business. It's all incredibly limited. I mean, it's a giant refugee camp. I mean, it's horrendous. So just to sort of, you know,
which doesn't make for a happy cooperative group of people.
No, exactly.
As neighbors either. Yeah. Let's face it. It's going to be trouble. And if we had Palestine on our borders, I'm sure we would also be a little bit skeptical about what would happen if all of a sudden they had equal status. And we, you know, these are all land grab issues. In the end, it comes down to territory. Over and over again, it comes down to territory. I think this is going to be more and more the state of the world as populations increase and resources decrease. More and more the state of the world. But anyway, we might as well get used to that. Hey, you know, might as well get used to that.
Go out and have a barbecue.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay because Rick Perry, when he's elected the next president, is going to sort it out. You want to hear a frightening little stat about Rick Perry?
Oh, sure.
He's never lost an election. 27 years of holding public office in Texas, he's never lost an election. The stats are not good, are they?
He's on paper anyway, he's now leading Mitt Romney as the presumptive Republican leader.
Oh, miles ahead. Romney doesn't stand a chance. Here's another little stat that's kind of interesting, you know, apropos what's going on with Israel and America and et cetera, et cetera. During the August recess, this is just in August, in 1 month, 81 members of the House of Representatives in the states, which is 20% of the entire body of the House of Representatives, visited Israel for free, courtesy of the American Israel Education Foundation. So that's in August. This August.
It's a very powerful lobby.
That's a fifth of the entire House of Representatives was brought to Israel and shown a nice time.
Well, they'll
show you a nice time.
It's somewhat illustrative of a combination of things, a very strong Israeli lobby and the fact that... And what money can do, yeah. And the fact that, you know, it is important on the world stage, there's no question. And... because there's oil all over the place. I mean, if it was just a desert with nothing in it, they wouldn't give a shit. I'm pretty convinced of that. Follow the money.
Send drones.
Madian is right. Follow the money.
Follow the money. Send your drones. Send drones to Israel. Yeah, you know, but speaking of send in the drones, you know, feeding troops in Afghanistan, the American Defense Department, of course, we've got a bunch of troops there still. Do we have a bunch of troops there still?
You have not as many. Supply is everything in a war. Well, lines.
The Defense Department in America expects to spend $1.7 billion this year just feeding them. This is $1.7 billion in hot dogs, chicken wings, and the occasional T-bone steak and lobster tail. Yeah, we're spending $1.7 billion just feeding the troops in Afghanistan.
So, no vegetables?
At the same time as the Republicans are saying, we have to cut back on teacher salaries.
Well, you know, they come back with any sorts of problems.
No vegetables.
They come back with a lot of problems, including a lack of fiber in their diet. A little known
consequence. That's a lot of money, though. But $1.7 billion, we're not even talking about how many things they're blowing up. We're just talking about hot dogs.
I bet you that's low. I mean, is that just the price of the food? What about all the transportation and distribution?
I don't know.
Yeah, I bet you it's way more than that.
No, that's just Afghanistan.
Hot dogs, chicken wings. Yeah, all
and the
good
occasional
stuff.
T-bone steak.
All the food groups.
Jeez. Yeah, it's good, isn't it? $1.7 billion, where we choose to spend our money on this necessary war? It's an odd one, huh? It really is an odd one. Oh, well. Guatemala? Let's go to Guatemala, because while we're busy wrecking the Middle East, South America has kind of taken off all by itself.
Yeah.
Guatemala went to the polls last Sunday. And
what did the people in Warsaw have to say?
Well, the candidates promised to confront the mafias that have turned the poor Central American country into a killing field. I just thought we might check out what's happening to our southern brethren. Well, top issue, violence. Mexican drug cartels have taken over towns. More than 90% of the cocaine that enters the U.S. crosses the Guatemalan border. Martial law has been declared in the provinces. So, a right-wing retired general is in the lead, but he's going to be forced into a runoff election. Otto Perez, 60 years old, he promises to send troops into streets and fight criminal gangs. And he gets he gets 37% of popular support with the promise of sending the army into the streets to fight. You know, things must be a little bit rough when that gets popular support. And we complain about our riots, you know. It's like, send in the troops. Meanwhile, Manuel Baldison, who is a wealthy hotel owner, is fighting Otto Perez with a populist message supporting the elderly and the poor. So this is what the election
the military.
In Guatemala is about: is send troops into the streets, or we could help the elderly and the poor. Who do you think's gonna win?
Do you have anything more specific to say about
Guatemala? Frank LaRue, who's a human rights activist and the UN special rapporteur on Guatemala, he says the trouble is people don't realize that when someone offers the iron fist, it's going to apply to everyone. It's even going to be used against people who voted for the guy in the first place. And this is this thing that we're doing with drones and surveillance as well.
Yeah.
It's like we don't realize that just because we voted for it doesn't mean we are not going to be prosecuted by it.
Well, and to a great extent, it's like putting the toothpaste back in the tube. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
Once there's this, once there's surveillance, the chances of somebody turning off one of those cameras on the streets or turning off the cookie, as the aforementioned cookie on your computer, which follows you around,
yeah.
And
traces what books you read in the library and, decides that for some reason you've clicked a word that makes you suspect.
Yeah. Or enhances the ability of the military, or the new omnibus crime bill in Canada, which has some elements which I suppose some elements make a certain amount of sense. But man, there's a lot of thuggishness in it.
Yeah,
you grow six plants in your marijuana plants in your basement, you automatically go to jail for 2 years if you're caught.
There you go.
Automatically.
There you go. For 2 years, huh? Well,
that'd be so you're taking the discretion.
Who's going to water your plants while you're in jail?
Well, yeah, among many other problems. I agree with you. Yes.
That's a real issue. Yeah. That's
in and of course, now Canada. That the Conservatives have their majority, they can push it through.
Hmm. And the other thing that this guy, Frank LaRue of the UN says, which I think is an interesting statement, he says, yes, this is going to be a government of order if the general, Otto Perez, wins, but order imposed with violence is undemocratic. And this is a really interesting concept. It's not a democracy if you impose your order with violence. And this is speaks to Israel. It speaks to Afghanistan. It speaks to Iraq. It's speaking to Libya. Oh, yeah. It's speaking to the way the world is going, that the more we feel, you know, it's speaking to jailing rioters. The more we feel that governments need to impose security with violence, the farther we get from democracy. It's no longer people having a say. If one side has all the weapons and the body armor, the people are no longer really living in a democracy.
Let me throw a big fat wrench for a moment. And it speaks to a couple of things. First, many people's belief that it is of necessity that they're going to put the army in the streets to crack down on particularly criminal gangs and drugs. And let me give you a little nuanced picture.
Oh, do.
It's the first time ever that I've been
massage
nuanced.
Me with yes. your nuance.
At how powerful and pervasive organized crime is. See, one of the many managerial problems for people with large amounts of cash illegally obtained is to launder it. Well, here's a good way. Evidence linking stolen art to organized crime continues to pile up. In 2006, a stash – and this is in Quebec, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
A stash of more than 2,500 paintings was found stored in the warehouses of two drug dealers in Quebec City. Every month, these guys were placing hundreds of paintings in auction houses across Quebec. They were using the system to launder their blood money, place a man in the audience who inflates the price and buys the painting. Auction house gets its percentage. Money is cleaned. It's really good business.
It's beautiful. I'm liking this painting more and more with every bid.
I was just going to say, I should put some art out there. Well, inflate the price. You might care.
Clean up some of this dirty money.
Yeah. It gets churned into the great economy. Yes.
And all the time we're crying against, you know, sending the army into the street. I do have to acknowledge reports from Guatemala that when the army does go into these lawless areas, they get applauded by the citizens because they're so used to being beaten up. In fact, you want to know what one of the most dangerous jobs in the world is? Apparently, this is statistically true. One of the most dangerous jobs in the world is being a bus driver in Guatemala City. Apparently, hundreds of bus drivers have died in holdups.
Hundreds?
Hundreds of bus drivers.
And
in holdups,
city can't be huge. It's not huge. Mm. I mean, that's probably a really grim percentage.
You try getting across it when your bus driver is just being shot.
Try finding a bus in Guatemala City. Yeah.
Yeah. More than 100,000 guards armed with shotguns protect even the humblest cafe. So everybody is like hired.
So it's
somebody with
a
shotgun.
It's a police.
No, these aren't police. These are people with shotguns that you hire
to stand
enterprise. Outside your stall. And protect you from thuggishness. Yeah. So on the one hand, you know, we go, oh, it's awful that they're bringing in the army. But the other hand, you go, the citizens of Guatemala are feeling a little timid.
Well, it's extortion on another level and probably in many cases because it's a bunch of strong-arm guys saying, walking into your pub or your cafe or your store and saying, you know, you need protection. Did you know you needed protection?
Mm-hmm.
And for $100 a day or $100 a week?
Mm-hmm.
We'll give you protection,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling. I'm not doubting that probably a lot of it is needed, but presumably
the
system
that many
is just
people
horrendous.
Out there, by the time you have that many people out there with shotguns in their hands, then you kind of go, yeah, there you go. In the meantime, there's been a typhoon hitting Japan, caused all kinds of flooding.
Right up where the
Fukushima?
The Fukushima, yes. I was groping for Fukushima.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It should now be called the Holy Fukushima Reactor, because that's what everybody who sees it says.
Flooded rivers, 5 million people.
This is not going to help the world economy particularly.
Wow.
Expect to have to find value in things other than the...
Buy American.
expect to find value in things other than the zeros in your bank account. Just stop watching the stock market and imagining your wealth.
Of necessity. I mean,
start being kind to people around you. Let's invest some of our lives into human capital and forget this capitalism for a little while. But did I say that? Originality.
It's 2 weeks in a row you've gone all soft on
originality is the fine art of remembering what you hear, but forgetting where you heard it.
Yeah. I have a corollary to that, and I think it may be original, but you never know. I might have forgotten where I heard it, is that if you're going to misquote me, at least make me sound intelligent.
Well, I'll do my best. In the meantime, geologists have discovered the oldest life forms yet. They've discovered fossil microbes that are 3.4 billion years old of bacteria, which lived when the Earth, which was only about a billion years old, was boiling hot and lacked any breathable oxygen. The organisms appear to have survived by eating sulfur, the way bacteria live in deep-sea hydrothermal vents. They found some fossil evidence. Well, they think they have. You know, by the time it's a fossil, you're just going, you see that?
By the time it's
that was a bacteria, and you're going, well, maybe it was a bacteria, maybe it was an air bubble. But they're convinced that this is the best documented, most convincing examples of Earth's first life forms. This comes out of Texas A&M University, and they discovered
three point four billion years ago. Billion has nine zeros. Just to give you an idea, the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. Six zeros. So there's a big long distance of time.
And while we're on the science news, should we do some science news?
Yeah.
Some peer-reviewed journals. Some science news.
Yeah.
Did we talk about Borneo's rainbow toads?
No.
Well,
I know nothing of this. I bet you they're poisonous.
Borneo's rainbow toads and discovered seven new species of Philippine forest mice. We've discovered a new genus of blind Bulgarian beetles and four new species. We have.
Yeah, you're taking credit for this?
Four new species of jewel beetles. And six new species of New World micromoths.
They say.
And how long before they're extinct?
With 3.5 million kinds of insects, and they say they find new ones every day. With a charismatic mammal, you know, there aren't too many new ones to be found. It's interesting that they found a bunch of mice. Where is this? Borneo? Yeah.
Borneo. Like
the deepest, darkest jungles of Borneo.
What are you doing in Borneo? Oh, yeah, I found these things. Who's going to check it out, right? Go to Borneo and come and see them for yourself.
But apparently, when it comes to insects and beetles and that kind of, they find new ones all the time because they're little creepy crawly things and people don't want to dig around in there too much.
Very true. Cod mislabeling is rampant in Ireland.
Oh, and the fish stores.
The cod mislabeling, rampant. Casual prostitution is rampant in Wales, which is
interesting. Among the fishmongers.
Among the fishmongers of Wales. Yeah. And that's the country, not the mammal.
She was only the fishmonger's daughter, but, okay.
In the Orkney Islands, more than 1,000 human bones were unearthed in the Tomb of Otters. So that's some ancient slaughter. You know, one of the things that
some haplessly forgotten.
Exactly, thousands of human bones, and we have this impression that human life is sacred. You hear? I had this thought. Here's my thought. Here's my unifying thought for the day.
And it comes with 5 minutes to go.
This thought on my bicycle the other day. I was thinking about this argument.
Why isn't there a softer seat on this bicycle?
Whether religion and politics have any place with each other, and I was thinking about. The way religion is playing itself out in American politics, and it occurred to me that the religion of our leaders is almost the most important thing about them. The reason I say that is because the Christian ethos, particularly for fundamental Christians, or for fundamentalist Muslims for that matter, requires a certain amount of magical thinking. The idea that, you know, certain things happen mysteriously because God made them happen, as opposed to rational thinking, and that magical thinking is one of the most. And I was wondering, why has the Christian religion been, you know, that philosophy spent thousands of years trying to prove the existence of God. And you're going, why is this necessity to prove the existence of God passed on from generation to generation? Why is it so important? And it suddenly occurred to me, it's so important because if we believe in this hierarchical model of God the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, or any of the Old Testament models, what we believe in is a hierarchy that puts mankind on the top of the pile. And essentially, when we've spent all this time trying to prove the existence of God, what we've been trying to prove is the primacy of mankind.
That mankind
shall have dominion over the earth. And that's why we've spent 1,000 years on this project of proving the unprovable. And that's why it's fundamentally important that we have leaders who believe in a rational approach to an integrated universe as opposed to an irrational magical thinking that puts mankind separate and at the top of the pyramid. And it strikes me that that's essentially where we're going wrong and why we can't tackle climate change, why we can't tackle population, why we can't tackle war, because we keep on proving that we're on top, we deserve to be on top, and everything else should bow and crumble before our feet. Magical thinking, religiosity, I say put atheists in power.
And I can't believe you opened up this wonderful, juicy tome at the end of the show. I could go on and on. A couple things come to mind. First,
oh, do go on.
Very powerful microphones are placed in front of people who say things like, Katrina in New Orleans in 95 was God saying that you live evil lives if you're gay and promiscuous, and therefore Katrina went across your path. And then there was they echoed that with that
think how angry God's going to be about gays in the military.
Oh man,
he's going to be pissed.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know what I heard, by the way, out of Texas? A whole bunch of gay clubs in Texas are now inviting the Marines to come and recruit. Come recruit us, and the Marines have to show up now.
There are actually gays in Texas?
Not only are they gays, they're gay clubs, and they're inviting the Marines to their parties to give little demonstrations, like Tupperware parties, or like...
Oh, cut that out.
It's fabulous, isn't it?
They're going to be in harm's way soon enough.
So I say atheists in power and an all-gay military.
I
think it shouldn't be don't ask, don't tell. I think homosexuality should be compulsive. Compulsory, not only compulsive, but compulsory if you're going to join the army.
Okay. No, actually, that probably things would be a lot better.
Things would be a lot better.
Yeah. Uniforms the other thing, would be just, better. Just getting back to that.
Parades would be sharper. The food would be better.
This core of man and its and our primacy and on top of the Great Pyramid. Didn't really religion come out of fear? I mean, fear of the dark, fear of clouds, fear of stars, fear of the unknown, fear of
that
volcanoes
may be where it
blowing
came out
up.
Of, but that's not where it ended.
Okay.
Where it's ended is with us on top of the pile, controlling the world to suit ourselves.
But it's
ourselves.
Still out of fear, isn't it?
It's
fear of that guy
fear,
over there who looks
fear
different
of losing
than
power.
I am.
I think it has much more to do with the manipulation of power. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at this hierarchy that's created, and if you look at all of the religious art, it's the perfect picture of a monarchy. It's the perfect picture of a hierarchy. And it's that, and the same thing in Islam. And one of the more dangerous sects of Islam are the Sufi Islams. And they're not dangerous to us. They're dangerous to the Islamists.
Oh, yeah, I was just about to say, yeah.
Because the Sufis believe that they have a direct connection with God, that they don't need an imam. They don't need a priest. Don't need a pope. They don't need a leader. God speaks to them directly.
And there's actually some fascinating,
and that makes them very untrustworthy.
Fascinating literature. They're quite a – are they not – sort of quite a gentle group on the whole.
Beautiful, are you kidding?
Yeah.
They come up with some of the best music and dancing in the world because they believe that they can communicate with God
poets.
By dancing and singing. Rumi.
Rumi. He's beautiful. I mean, he absolutely beautiful stuff.
Yeah, not
and it's like 7th century.
Fata Ali Khan.
A long time
and
ago.
All of my 14th, friends 13th. Down in Senegal who are all Sufi, Morid
really?
Muslims. Yeah, man. Them dance, them sing, them take care of each other.
It's like the Rastas.
They don't use Jamaican accents. But,
at least as far as
but
you know.
Here
not,
comes
not
Charlie.
When, not when you're around.
Here comes Charlie with some atheistic jazz from the 50, 60, 70 years ago, and no magical thinking whatsoever, except for the magic of the rhythm, the magic of the beat, and the magic of another hour wasted with Adam and Graham. It's just coming up to 10 o'clock. This is the end of the end of the end of the world news. We'll think of something to say next week.
Well, you asked at the beginning of the show, is it the end of the world? And we've proven once again that
it's not.
Quite surprisingly, it's not.
It's not the end of the world, because the squid are still just shagging in the deep.
Just the end of a wasted hour. Yes.
Don't ask, don't tell. And start questioning the magical thinking of your leaders. It's dangerous. And mankind is just another part of the planet. Get to it. That's all I got. Thanks for being here, Graham.
Thank God, whatever God that is.
Check out the Living Room Broadcasting Corporation. Here comes 10 o'clock, and here comes Charlie. Peace out.